Aye, definitely.
Yeah. I don't think we ought to get bogged down in discussion as we did a bit earlier of previous party resolutions or correspondences, public or private, because I think this is a special party meeting. We want to be here to discuss what has happened in Poland over the last 2 years. Comrade Double referred to Marx saying that there's no such thing as totalitarianism because there's always a chance, always a means for workers at the grassroots to organise. When they do and have organised in that way in Poland, the question we're here to discuss is what the socialist response to that historical event is. And I want to argue that the response must be to encourage those people to go further rather than to oppose them. The key, I think, to understanding the problems that Comrade Double first raised of democracy and socialism is in fact answered by seeing the relationship between socialism and democracy rather than some kind of opposition between the two. That's to say that if socialism means social control by everybody in their own interests, that is the ultimate form of social democracy, and which is why at one stage when the party was being formed, one of the suggestions as to what the party should have been called all those years back was the Social Democratic Party. So we nearly beat them to it. There's this connection between democracy, and there always has been, and that's the nature of the working class movement in history, is that the working class forming the majority have ultimately this connection with democracy in its socialist form as what they ultimately seek to obtain. In answer to Corey Dabble's question about the trade unions, and how he asked, can anybody show this connection, how the trade unions are, in some sense, a step towards socialism? Well, Marx said, and I think we ought to support him on this particular point, that the trade unions can be a training school for socialism.
Yeah.
They're a form of working class organisation which, provided it's democratic, and how democratic it is will reflect the level of consciousness of the workers who are actually doing it, that is a step in the movement by the working class to obtain socialism. We mustn't lose sight of the fact that socialism is a class issue. It's this form of society to be established by the working class in their interests, and therefore any working class organisation in their interests, even if misguided, must be at the very least related to that struggle, even if it is in many ways a diversion or a distortion of that struggle. So in this way, the Polish trade unions can be seen as a step, and that's why these socialist standards published articles such as saying the next step is socialism. These are steps, and particularly in Poland, since the formation of the trade union in Poland took place in a country which not only had effectively banned genuine trade unions for years and years, but also had the audacity to call itself a socialist country or a socialist regime. So there was that double irony, and that's why it was very much a great step for the workers to do that. Just to answer a couple of other points briefly before I come on to what I originally wanted to say. At one point, Comrade Skelton referred to Solidarity having completely supported the status quo. I quote her there very carefully so as not to be interrupted. But of course, if Solidarity had completely supported the status quo, there would have been no point whatsoever in it ever being formed. They didn't quite completely support the status quo. They, in fact, were a representation of workers rebelling against the state, to put it in its most loose and vague form to start with. They were against the state in some way or another. Comrade Skelton then proceeded, rather torturously, to attack Solidarity on two separate counts which contradict one another. On the one hand, she blamed them for having failed, and I quote her again, to aim for political power. And at the same time, she attacked them for the opposite reason, in the sense that they attempted to become too political rather than just remaining a trade union. This kind of contradiction arises out of the fact that the working class in Poland was no more openly and fully in support of socialism than the working class anywhere else, and yet they were neither were they totally blind or stupid to their interests. They realised, just like workers here realise, that they had to organise to protect themselves and to resist the pressure of capital trying to push down their living standards. One other small point before I go on, and that is that Comrade Skelton asked how it can be understood that the fact that Poland owed these debts to the Western banks, and she says, how could that lead to a contraction of industrial production rather than an expansion?
The answer is
that as a result of the debts which Poland owed to the Western banks, there were less consumer goods on the Polish market. In other words, finance had to be diverted to the West to pay back those debts rather than being invested in industrial production in Poland. And the priorities of production in Poland were geared towards goods which could be exported and finance which could be exported, rather than producing consumer goods for Polish workers to buy. And that's the reason why the peasants in Poland did not want to sell their food in order to get money, which they didn't have anything they could buy with. One other point was that Comrade Skelton then said it was rather bad timing to tell the Polish workers to form a democratic political party which could aid for socialism. How can she possibly say that it's bad timing for us ever to say the one thing the party exists suddenly to say, and that is to urge workers to do exactly that, to form a political party to establish socialism? Now, I've got a few other specific points I wanted to raise which are more general. Firstly, I don't think the SBGB can meet today and discuss what the Polish workers should have done or should not have done. We can't moralise about it. All we can do is apply a Marxist analysis to the historical development which has taken place and is taking place at this very moment. The Polish crisis, so-called, is not, in fact, a national crisis. It's a national manifestation of a global problem, the problem of world capitalism, and in particular, its relationship to the problem of world recession, which has recently hit capitalism. And this is the kind of point which the party can point out, which nobody else is pointing out explicitly, not in the same way. The fact that it's a worldwide crisis, not just one country, not just Poland's political problems, but a world crisis. By 1980, Poland owed $27 billion. And as I've explained, this led to a lack of consumer goods on the home market and indirectly to reluctance on the part of peasants who own 80% of the land to sell their food so that workers could eat it because they felt there were no consumer products or agricultural machinery which they could have bought had they got the money for their food. This led to the meat price rises in the summer of 1980, which led eventually to the Gdansk Agreement of August 1980. The point which we can bring out from this and stress in our propaganda is that only a worldwide democratic class-conscious political movement can replace the worldwide capitalist system of private and state capitalism with worldwide socialism. In other words, the real problem which faces us in relation to communicating with our Polish fellow workers is the problem of nationalism. The problem of nationalism in all its forms. That's what we've got to be attacking, if you like, rather than attacking solidarity in its organisation as a trade union. It's nationalism which is the problem. All of these problems which lie in the background, the recession which led to the ultimate financial crisis of 1980 when the debts had to be repaid, the fact that the Western countries, because of their own recessions, didn't have the money to want to buy those goods from Poland, the fact that the debts couldn't be repaid at that point, the fact that the so-called underdeveloped or backward countries of the world between them owe $200,000 million at this moment to Western banks and to other countries. All of this is caused... Will you stop interrupting, please? You can come in afterwards. All of these problems are related to the fact that capitalism as a global system develops unevenly. It's summed up in that one word, uneven development. That's the typical problem of capitalism. The fact that just as two companies compete and they have an uneven competition, in the same way countries or areas of development can be uneven. This is why you've got countries like Poland where economic crisis, thanks to the fact that they owe these billions of dollars, leads, in a true Marxist fashion, the economic crisis does lead to political repression in order to screw more wealth out of the workers to pay back that wealth. That's the way in which trade union suppression has always been related to economic crisis. And it's only with the gradual economic development in Britain, together with trade union agitation and together with the working class movement, that we've reached a stage now where we have trade unions in this country. So all of these problems of recession and debt and uneven development are all global. That's what we've always got to stress. Now, thirdly, I'd like to come on to look at the problem of working class interest. The Socialist Party stands for the working class interest. That's all. That is what we exist as. We are the working class party. We stand for the working class interest, and that's all. It so happens that we interpret the working class interest to mean establishing socialism. But that's why we want to get socialism, not because it's a nice idea, but because it's in the interest of the working class, which is the class whose interests we seek to represent. And as with all working class resistance to the capitalist state and to strikes and trade unions, our attitude is bound to be dialectical. It's bound to even be ambivalent, if you like. In that we, on the one hand, express class solidarity, because that's the definition of the Socialist Party, that's our sole function. We express that class solidarity. We declare support for our fellow workers, as workers themselves, in their efforts to resist the capitalist state and to try to look after their interests. But at the same time, we oppose their political ideas, the ideas of nationalism, Catholicism, ultimately the idea of accepting capitalism. And all of these ideas are held by workers. So we oppose the political ideas. But if you oppose somebody's ideas, it doesn't mean that you oppose them as workers or their own interests, which they seek, however misguidedly, to follow. The fact that they are workers trying to look after their interests means that we support them as workers, but we don't support their particular political ideas. There is a difference. So I don't think we should shy away from the concept of this qualified support. It happens all the time. We're giving qualified support for this reason. And this is what happened in the leaflet, which, this is one of the few, a couple of exceptions. I would like to refer to a particular document because it's of interest. And also because it's been misquoted and distorted by both Comrade Skelton and Comrade Young in the arguments about this matter. On this leaflet which we produced on Poland, we did just that. Right, if I can come on now and just look at this leaflet. What the leaflet said about Poland, and I think we must stand by this. By their principled and democratic actions, the workers in solidarity have won the admiration and support of socialists. Even though, same sentence, we strongly oppose their nationalist and religious illusions, and even though we recognise the limitations of trade union action, and then it comes on at the end to say that socialism is the only answer. And to this end, the Socialist Party offers support to our fellow workers in Poland. We offer them our support to that end in the establishment of socialism, because to establish socialism, we have to offer them our support. It has to be a worldwide movement. We have to express that solidarity across national frontiers. Neither should we forget the significant element, which Comrade Skelton referred to, who are demanding, in their words, real, genuine socialism. What was it? In the Congress, at Congress itself, there was a banner pinned up at the time of the Congress, which said something like, we want genuine socialism, not distortions of it. Now, what they actually mean by that, and what the individual conceptions of it, are not something we can pedantically analyse here. That's up to them to develop. What we can say is there are certain elements, certainly, who have actually seen through the state ideology. They're actually saying, you've told us for years that this is socialism, we recognise that it's not. That is a tremendous step forward. The fact that the lie that socialism exists in Russia and Poland and China is actually being seen through. That's what the party has been working for and waiting for years and years, and now is the moment when it's actually beginning to happen, as Comrade Skelton was able to show when she quoted from Jednusk these passages which talk about, in so many words, about real socialism, about getting rid of state ownership and having genuine social ownership. Then we have the problem of solidarity's bureaucratisation. The MKS, Interfactory Strike Committees, which spoke for the workers at Gdansk, there's no doubt that they were gradually bureaucratised, just as the Soviets were bureaucratised by the Leninists in Russia many years earlier. There's no doubt there was a certain degree of accommodation. There was a development of reformist ideas, as there are in all of the unions in Britain, as Comrade Buick's statement points out, I think. But the fact that 5,000 people were put in prison for opposing the state, for opposing a state dictatorship which claimed to be socialist, is no joke. It's an historical advance beyond that ideology of state capitalism. So when we offer solidarity advice based on our earlier experiences of the Labour Party in 1906 in this country, we do so essentially because we do support them in their efforts. We see their efforts as strategically misguided, and yet we support them in their attempt to oppose the state and in their attempt to pursue class interests in opposition to the state. By affiliation or directly, most trade unions in this country and many trade unionists are reformists and in support of capitalism in one way or another, but this reflects their level of consciousness. It doesn't stop us from supporting the working class interest which the Socialist Party was established to represent. Finally, I'd like to look at this question of political struggle. Comrade Skelton said earlier that the Polish Union refused to adopt a political struggle. I don't think it's a matter of them refusing to do anything, as if we've gone to them and argued with them and they've obstinately and maliciously turned around and spat in our face. It doesn't work that way. We can't, as I said earlier, we can't simply sit here and pontificate what they should or shouldn't do, or moralise about it. Every class struggle, as Marx said, is a political struggle. Inevitably, it is, whether they want it to be or not. They can't refuse to let it be a political struggle. When two classes are in opposition, they're fighting over power, power over society, power over resources, and that's the definition of a political struggle. This rigid division, as Comrade McLeaney was saying, between economic and political is false. The industrial struggle is itself political. because it's a matter of social relations. And as socialists, we are on the side of wage labour against capital. Now, when Marx referred to his studies of what would now be called economics as political economy, it was for precisely this reason, that Marx's main contribution, and the party's main contribution to economics, or to the study of society in general, is to show that economics are political, to show that you can't look objectively at what's going on in Poland or anywhere else. There's no such thing as pure objectivity. You look at it from a class point of view in this constant struggle for power between two classes. And what the SBGB must avoid is following the same path that has happened over the last 100 years, whereby political economy of Marx has been transformed into economics of 1982 in the school A-level textbooks and all the rest of it, and in the universities, economics, as if there's nothing political about it. We mustn't follow that same path. We must recognise that economics are political, and that therefore we cannot make a rigid division between strikes, trade unions, the industrial struggle, the political struggle. We must recognise that there is a class struggle going on in Poland, and we must be absolutely clear about what side of that struggle we are on, essentially and basically. And having done that, we can be all the more vituperative, as Comrade Skelton would be pleased to hear, and all the more insistent upon how much we oppose the particular strategy, the particular ideas, the particular policies of solidarity, the particular reformism, nationalism, religion. But we can't do that until we've made our position clear to start with, that we support them. We support the working class interests, and that's our only reason for existence, that we support wage labour rather than capital. That one of the party's earlier slogans was the world for the workers, combining those ideas of politics and economics into one social whole.
Have you finished? Yeah. Thanks. Could I just offer you some advice? When you are in the process of debate, what you're debating with is what has been said on the subject matter that is under review, and not that so-and-so said it. And if you drop the reference to who said this statement, it makes it a lot easier and ceases to be a personal discussion and one about, you know, the subject that's on the view. Who wants to come in now?
Somebody who hasn't spoken.
Yes.
I haven't spoken.
Yes. Harry Young.
Come in, Young.
First of all, I haven't the slightest intention of coming here to cry over spilt milk. Comrade Slapper can carry on as long as he likes. The fact is, this was a disaster and a frightful error. Party was wrong. What's done's been done, and that's the end of it. The only value out of it all is to learn where we went wrong and correct the mistake. Now, to me, the whole thing oscillates around this question of whether we could say we supported the solidarity movement. Unfortunately, like everybody else, I regret this more than anybody, we don't have satisfactory detailed information about the situation there for obvious reasons. Everything's done to prevent you getting it, and what we succeed to get is very limited. I do have one contact, in fact, who used to live with me in the flat, whose parents are Polish and has contact with Poland. I wrote to him, but unfortunately I've got no reply. I did have a letter previously about his opinion of it all, which was very helpful. About the situation of solidarity itself. And by the way, of course, I would thoroughly agree. I think Mix raised a very, very interesting point about the paragraphs in the pamphlet and about whether we support trade union action and on what grounds we support it and how we support it, because it does refer to all this. But I would remind you of the fact that Solidarity was a completely nationalistic movement. Eventually, over 2 million members of Solidarity were peasants. Those very same peasants that Comrade Slapper is so concerned about not having any money to buy machinery, who didn't want higher wages at all, who weren't trade unionists and weren't striking for higher wages. They were interested in higher prices for their produce. Incidentally, I think it's completely up the creek with all this business about debts. There's nothing that any banks can do about. What can they do? Send a gunboat up the Vistula. He's pointed out himself that other countries have far much more money, and it has the basis of the business is the economic situation, the recession which was the result of a tremendous industrialisation programme which took place in Poland after the war, which completely failed and went bankrupt as a result of lack of demand. However, and therefore I don't think that the debts really come into it. About the question of the attitude of the party, which I entirely agree with Mick, applies to Poland as much as Uganda or Zimbabwe or anywhere else, because you still have, as far as my information goes up to the moment, you still have a majority of peasantry in Poland. You still have a minority working class, even worse situation than in Russia. So that there you've got all the elements of what the thing in the pamphlet is talking about. And while it's true, and I don't only reference myself of Marx to totalitarianism, but I do thoroughly agree that he was of the view that there is no situation in which the workers can't express their interest in some form. I've got a very interesting book just issued about the situation in Russia in 1916, when thousands of strikers were being slung into uniform and sent to the front. In spite of everything, this bloke says that they still found ways and means in the workshops to find some form of expression. And of course, that's what happened in Poland. And Marx's reference to trade unions being schools of communism, and it's frequently easy to take these things and blow them up as more than the man wanted. He made a speech, a very brief speech, to a trade union conference in Hanover, to a visitor, and he made the statement there that, well, if I remember the memory, that it was in the trade union struggle that it was made apparent to workers where their real interests lied, and gave them the opportunity to realise their real position. But it's absolutely true, and I would agree with those comrades, both Slepper and Double, who said that we do find ourselves in some position of difficulty. I was an official of the National Association of Schoolmasters, and they're nationalistic, religious, patriotic. And of course, I, as far as I could, disagree with them. But I couldn't disagree with them when they were striking for more money. So that under those circumstances, I think the situation is completely clear, and that we could, in this leaflet, have said that we did not support Solidarity's nationalistic and patriotic and other the economic demands for the regeneration of Polish industry and the economy and so on. My own view is that we made a mistake there, that it's been corrected, and generally speaking, we could perhaps, to some extent, sharpen up a bit, we could hone up a bit the statements, amplify perhaps a little bit with actual examples, the statements in the trade union pamphlet and in the questions of the day pamphlet, but the fact still remains, and we still have to insist that we do oppose... Look, most of us who had been in Gdansk would have been cheering with the rest of the workers. I'm sure we would. But in spite of all that, we have to take a stand to maintain the existence of the party, because once you go out supporting these people, you bury yourself in their movement. And that's something that we dare not do. And I think that, difficult though it may be, and this is applied in the history of the Russian Revolution as well, hasn't it? For far as it goes, give him credit, Lenin was saying in 1917, yes, we do stand for the Democratic Republic, yes, we do want free elections, but we also want something more. Now, I think that we made a mistake in this case, and we've got to make it absolutely clear, and this meeting will have done some good if we make it absolutely clear that while supporting trade union action, as we say on sound lines, and free speech and democratic rights, at the same time, we do make it absolutely clear that we don't support nationalistic and patriotic movements in the process. That's all.
Does anybody else want to make a contribution? Nobody wants to make... No, just look, Charmin, let's see if everybody's made their contributions, and then we can deal with the question of how much time we're going to give to each other to...
Yeah, I'd like to say something about Mick's point about parliamentary democracy leading to dictatorships in various countries. But I think you've got to bear in mind that it often happens the other way about as well. I think that in the final analysis, the parliamentary democracy like we have in Britain and the United States helps to oil capitalism's wheels, and it makes it smoother to run in some ways, and different sections of the ruling class think that if you have democratic government, it's easier to influence that government into legislating in favour of a particular industry or a particular type of industry. And there have been plenty of examples of dictatorships that have gone back the other way. I mean, Iran is one. For instance, the Shah was deposed and a more democratic constitution was established. And Spain is another one. Before Franco died, he took steps to put in a constitutional monarchy and make Spain more democratic than it had been in the earlier part of his rule. And I mean, I think you do get instances where that does happen, that it goes from dictatorship back, as it were, to democratic government.
Can I answer that?
What do you want to do? Do you want question and answers, or do you want to come in and give a... You see, what I'm trying to do is, first of all, get everybody to make a statement, if they wish. Once I've established that nobody else wishes to make a statement, then I'm going to tell you how much time you've got and how much time we're going to allocate for questions and discussion. Fair enough?
Could we ask Mick to wind up?
Well, no. This is not...
Want a bit more of a discussion?
No, I mean, when everybody's finished.
Yeah, well...
Has
anybody else wish to make a contribution to the actual discussion, you know, the whole body of the discussion? That I just want to say a few words. First of all, there is a book on sale that you can get all of called The Summer Before the Frost. And I think it very neatly describes what the party's attitude appears to be as far as I'm concerned, and what the party's attitude is as far as I have read the various... circulars and so on, is very clear and concise and to the point. But with regards to the general opinion, and this is where you have to be, you see, Comrade Slapper is quite correct when he says that what the party's task here is quite clear, is to make a scientific analysis of events as they are. In short, to make a scientific analysis of reality. And this is what Comrade Barry McNeely said, is that what we're dealing with is reality. And it appears that, for instance, if you're going off banner headlines, this is very difficult. This isn't really good scientific facts, because one of the banners that the Solidarity had was that we are not slaves, we are workers. Well, to a socialist, you know, that doesn't really have any great merit at all. And so when we're talking about reality, all we can say... with regards to the movement which is taking place in Poland, and looking at it from the point of view of the class struggle, we see a trend in a particular direction. And we see also that at the present moment, the trend which we would have liked to see is not being realised. And so what we're concerned about is, again, as Clifford said, is this question of class identification. And the question of that arises with regards to Poland, of course, is a great many statements which have been made to the effect that whilst you may see a trend to some statements which are in support of the fact that what is taking place in Poland is not socialism, but I think in the main, the majority of the Polish working class are of the opinion that what they have there is socialism, and they want to get rid of it as quickly as possible. So I'm not going to say any more than that. I'm just going to... I felt I wanted to say that. Now...
Could I ask you a question on what you said, please, Comrade Chairman?
Well...
Have you got details of this book, Summer Before Frost? Who's the author?
Yeah, I haven't brought it with me. I can't remember the writer, but I shall give it to you. You can borrow it off me, and I'll bring it along with me. It's a Polish name, and it's a French... The writer of it is, of course, a French member of the French. You would call it the left. I would call it the those who believe in workers' control, which is, of course, the most of the statements that are appearing from the Workers' Socialist Party here. And when you go to visit Poland and see during the period of the 1980s, and you're looking at it from their point of view, you see it quite differently. to what we would say. You know, if you're looking at it from the point of view that you believe in workers' control, then this is, and solidarity is expressing this sort of ideas in the first instance, then you would support it, whereas as socialists we wouldn't. Anyway, you've got now, if we're going to finish at 5:30, you've got 55 minutes. So if we say 5 minutes for each question. Pardon?
Does it have to finish quite so early?
Well, I'm suggesting 5:30. If by 5:30...
We've had some break, but the next meeting starts at 8:30.
Yeah, but I mean...
7:30.
6, more or less. We've got to finish, I should think.
Okay.
No, I don't think you'll need more than 5 minutes each. But, I mean, if you're wanting to go into a long, discussion, then that's something different. So I'm going to suggest that you have 5 minutes each. That's as a, you know, if you want to take advantage of it. Okay, Mick, you wanted to ask a question.
I agree with what Conrad was saying, but perhaps he misunderstood the point I was making. What I was actually saying was that once these governments, what governments do is they see various... Well, let's stop from being... Okay, workers struggle and they establish democratic rights and they establish some form of parliamentary democracy. They may contribute a great deal to that. Once it's established, whether it's maintained or not will be a matter of whether it's in the interest of the government, whether it's in the interest of the ruling class.
Yeah.
Now, that is the point I'm making. As you say, sometimes it serves these. Sometimes, because, I mean, the free flow of information, this also helps the development of capital and things like that. But sometimes it doesn't. I mean, sometimes if you've got masses of workers out on the streets trying to push for higher wages or something like that, then they see a situation where an establishment of a military regime in order to physically prevent workers from gaining more of the social products, as you call it, or generally getting them back to work on the shop floor, in fact, they'll do that. But they'll certainly, I would agree, they'll certainly go the other way as well. Because trouble with a military regime is, not only do they repress the workers, but they also prevent capitalism developing as well. It prevents a certain amount of industrial development. So very often, as you're seeing South America now, I mean, parts of Brazil, I think, is now trying to get back to some form of elementary... democratic government, Argentine as well. Because, I mean, South America is a classic example. And that's the only point I was making. I tend to disagree with Conway Slam to some extent. What worries me, just to come on to the main point, this question of democratic organisation, whether it be for political rights, whether it be for trade unions, what concerns me about this is that if workers do not have socialist consciousness, if they are being encouraged in some way to organise democratically, then that in itself is a very good thing. I can see that, obviously, a social society is going to be built on those foundations. So we see some form of advantage in that. But the problem is, this has been the experience of workers, that very often happens is they come to believe, they become disillusioned, let me say, with democratic processes because it doesn't work.
Yes.
Because they haven't tackled the root cause, because they haven't tackled the capitalist system, they've become disillusioned with democracy. This is what happened in the 1930s. This is why so many workers went out and supported fascist movements in the 1930s. Was because what they believed was that the democratic process had failed. And that is the problem with supporting democratic movements of any kind, whether they be in trade unions or whether they be political, without... just on its own, without actually emphasising the need for the socialist alternative. In every case, let me say this to come back, I believe that our case should always be that socialism is the immediate possibility. I don't believe in any of this stuff about socialism in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
Socialism is on the cards now. If anyone wants to argue against that, then I would maintain they're opening the door to reformism. If they're going to argue socialism is for 10 years' time or something, then they're opening the floodgates for actually having no case against those who advocate reform. Our case is always that socialism is possible now, and we must advocate that workers should organise for socialism under whatever conditions they're in. But, as I say, I am rather concerned about support for democratic organisations for a number of the reasons.
Okay. Right, Sean.
Thank you. Now, Conrad Slapper made a few statements, one or two of which I felt were not quite accurate, but I think his statements with regard to 1980, he meant 1981 when he said the debts had to be repaid. That wasn't a problem in 1980. Likewise, the problem of workers unwilling to sell their produce for money, which wouldn't buy what they needed, was not a problem in 1980, as he stated. It became a problem in 1981. In 1980, their problem was that they were not being offered high enough prices by the government to ensure a living for themselves. Now, he says, and this is the real issue between us, that we should support solidarity. We should express support. He says this on the basis of this being a class movement and class sympathy. And as far as the word sympathy is concerned, that is one I would certainly use and emphasise, and I think I did do so in the articles I wrote and in the lectures I've done. I take my basis on this statement that was passed as a conference statement. It was originally an EC statement. The EC holds that while declaring our sympathy with the exploited and their resistance to the exploiters, it is essential, in order to avoid any possibility of misunderstanding, and in the light of the party's attitude of not advocating reforms, that we should avoid using the word support in relation to actions of reformist parties, groups and individuals. Now that, comrade, is party policy and remains party policy. And we have to, when we publish party literature, try and be aware of what party policy is and stick to it, and also when we're making statements on the platform. The Politics Committee said that they defended this statement of support because they say we support trade union action on sound lines. I quoted you the statement, also reproduced in this policy statement on reforms, which you might like to read, if you haven't already read it. We should oppose this particular organisation, since it was leading workers away from any idea of organising for socialism. It was clear of any class consciousness, and I say that quite categorically. If you read the Gdansk Agreement and the other agreements stated, here they say, the MKS declares it will respect the principles laid down in the Polish Constitution. These new unions are intended to defend the social and material interests of the workers and not to play the role of a political party. They will be established on the basis of the socialisation of the means of production and of the socialist system which exists in Poland today. They will recognise the leading role of the PUWP in the state. Now, you know, comrade, you can't have your cake and eat it. These people are prepared to form ladies with the government and promote reforms of the economy in the interests of the nation. That's what this organisation really is about. You must face the facts. It would be very nice if they were a lovely working class conscious, socialist conscious organisation. Some of them are socialists. It's unfortunate they haven't got round to forming a political organisation, and I would remind comrades here who are perhaps unaware of it that Poland is not a one party state. It was possible actually to form political groups and organisations in Poland in 1979, 1980 and 1981 until Jaruzelski's coup. But we saw no evidence of any socialist organisations emerging, even discussion groups. Now, on the contrary, they turned their back on any such idea. Comrade Slapper criticised me for saying they refused to do this. Well, the evidence is there that they did refuse to do this, and I suggest he reads the Labour focus on Eastern Europe, where, you know, this is only one of the sources where you'll find this evidence. Then you have the question of whether it's a democratic organisation. It was bureaucratised. Started off with a leader, a very powerful and strong leader, Lech Wałęsa, who would not be denied, who would not accept that when the clause 1 of the Gdańsk Agreement was seen by the delegates of the workers to be against what they wanted and their members wanted, he would not go back to the negotiating table and renegotiate it. He said it stands. Our experts have negotiated it. It stands. Now this is something that was decided undemocratically, right at the very start. You have a statement here made
by Slapper.
1 more minute. Can I come in?
Yeah, 1 more minute, Sean.
1 more minute. Buja, who's the head of the Solidarity in Warsaw, he said the Presidium is regarded as a sacred cow. There's a lot of statements like that in this document. The slogans we heard last summer were that our children are hungry. Solidarity solved no working class problems. Let workers have a garden path, and you have workers in Czechoslovakia, Hungary, East Germany, Russia today saying this is no longer going to be the answer. Let's steer clear of any idea of independent trade unions. They don't solve anything. They cause a hell of a lot of problems. You have people starving. In other words, they have misled workers, they've misguided them, and they've disillusioned them about something which could have been very useful indeed. An important thing that they completely ignored, and the Communist Labour has affected, I think, perhaps not deliberately, but he has affected, is the possibility that they had in 1980 of establishing the right to elect their own representatives to the Sejm. It's a multi-party state, and
German,
demanded it in 1970. They did not demand it in 1980. Although the grassroots workers wanted it in 1980.
Okay, right.
Now that is an important part. I hope that those who defend this leaflet can take that on board and consider it carefully.
Right,
why we should support this leaflet.